from Trudeau. Zhao waits in the middle. Wallace wants the cut back. Gets it! Yes! Ross Wallace sweeps Sheffield Wednesday into a sweet lead against Arsenal. They've lost two players through injury, and now they've lost a goal. Sheffield Wednesday 1, Arsenal 0.
And that is the sound, well, it's the sound of sport, but that's also the sound of money. It's high energy, it's all-consuming. Sport used to be a thing about community. It used to be tribal. Teams with their roots in interurban rivalries of the working classes, of ordinary people. Not so much anymore. Sport, as we know, it's big money, it's big business, it's anything but a democratic spectacle in many parts of the world, in many codes, places where ticket prices are in the stratosphere, player payments boggle the mind. It may well happen here. We're well along the way if you look at things like the AFL in this country. We ain't seen nothing yet compared with much of the overseas experience. For a taste of what may be the looming future, we're joined by Simon Cooper. He's a Financial Times magazine columnist. He's co-author of Soconomics. He joins me via Skype from Paris. Simon, welcome.
Thank you.
Sport increasingly becoming the plaything of the super rich.
Yeah, I mean, really everybody likes sport now. I mean, a lot of sports used to have a traditional working class following, and that was particularly true in Europe of football. And now, really, those class boundaries are fading. And so whether it's an Arsenal football match or a Rugby World Cup semi-final, rich people also want to go. And so ticket prices have been rising to get their money, and that does price out a lot of ordinary people. And it's not just going to games. I mean, also, if you want to meet a famous sportsman, your chances of doing so are much better if you're rich, because you can pay him to speak at your company, or if you want to play Wentworth Golf Course. Costs a lot of money now.
Or you can own a team. I mean, those ticket prices, and take us to, say, Premier League in the UK, around football, soccer, those ticket prices are well out of reach of an ordinary supporter.
Well, I mean, the average Briton can still watch Premier League football in some seats. I mean, if you're paying, say, close to £1,000 for a season ticket, most of the working population can do that. For some people, it's a sacrifice, but it's possible. Poor people have definitely been priced out. But what you're increasingly seeing is a larger share of seats at the top end that are unaffordable for ordinary people. So quite a lot of seats at quite a lot of games are getting out of their reach.
But even £1,000 for a season ticket boggles the mind. And I guess this escalation of the money game around sport, it sort of begins with good intentions, doesn't it? It begins with using things like TV rights to funnel into player payments to increase the quality of resources and the quality of the spectacle. I guess this is where it ends up, perhaps, with that quality spectacle then being siphoned off out of reach of ordinary people.
I mean, I don't think the people who run sports teams have tended to have kindly intentions. I think that what happened is that when TV realized that what people love more than anything else and are willing to pay for on TV for is live sport, TV started to pour a lot of money into sport. That money went on making the stadiums look nicer, because, of course, the stadiums had to be nice and clean if you're going to put them on TV as well. Mm. And once the stadiums were nicer and going to the game became a more comfortable experience, you can go to the toilets and it wouldn't be disgusting, then you started to get, a higher class of spectator. And from then on, ticket prices started to rise. I would say that it all starts with TV. I mean, really, you know, Kerry Packer in Australia 40 years ago was one of the first TV moguls to discover the power of live sport. And then your own Rupert Murdoch from the late 80s, especially in Britain. So that's really where it starts with some Australians and Silvio Berlusconi in Italy.
And yet, you know, under spectacularly unpopular sports, for example, like Test cricket, weirdly, paradoxically, I guess, remain perhaps a bit more accessible, whereas the things which are truly popular, which have that devoted supporter groups like soccer, like football, they become increasingly plutocratized, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about live sport is there's no alternative. I mean, there's only one Arsenal-Bayern Munich match, which is a game we had in London last week. You can't create an alternative to that. There's only a few great players a few great clubs. And so, you know, if you want to watch Arsenal Bayern Munich, only 60,000 people can. The number of people worldwide who want to see that match is way, way higher. And so, you know, clubs honestly could charge much more in ticket prices than they do. Actually, they're keeping ticket prices down because they know that the public would get really, really angry if they raise them. I mean, you could probably charge £300 on an average ticket at Arsenal or Chelsea in London and still fill the stadium.
Simon Cooper is a columnist, the Financial Times. He's a co-author of Soconomics. We're talking about sport becoming, well, increasingly a thing for rich folk. And that's a difficult balance, Simon, for clubs trying to, yes, keep some sort of a popular support, but at the same time, you know, sell the tickets at the prices which fund the game in the way it has to be funded in the modern world.
Well, I don't know if it has to be funded. I mean, we've just decided that sport's going to be a high-wage industry, and they can charge a lot, so they do. I mean, of course, you could, at a big sports club, you could say, you know what, we're going to let everybody in quite cheaply, and as a result, we're going to pay our players less, and so we're going to lose our best players to other teams, but, you know, that's the way we want to do it. There is a these are choices, or you could have as a whole league, you know, you could have as the whole, I don't know, AFL in Australia, say, okay, we're going to keep ticket prices very low, we're going to agree with all the clubs. Clubs could say, actually, our purpose is to serve the community, and we do that by keeping ticket prices low. So the fact that they don't do that is a choice. There's nothing forcing them as a bunch to go the plutocratic way. They want to because everybody likes money.
And yet, once upon a time, those sports were played with great crowd support. You know, the fans still went, the games were still good, the excitement was there, the loyalties were fierce, and maybe the quality wasn't as high as it is now, and maybe the places weren't as comfortable to watch. But I'm wondering what the turning point there was and why all that changed.
I mean, I come back again to TV. I think that once television discovered, once you've got loads of TV channels, once commercial TV arrives and you say, well, what's the thing that people most want to pay for to watch on TV? Turns out it's live sport. And so, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, a big game in a sport might be watched only by 30,000 people. Only the 30,000 people in the stadium would see that. Now a big game can be watched by many, many millions of people around the world. And of course, the amount of money that's involved then becomes exponential.
And as media fragments, as it has done, this becomes increasingly attractive, having discovered that secret source. And that's still the thing that will gather people at one place and one time around one program. And that's a very rare thing in media these days.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, you could have the whole country watching the Wednesday night, whether it was a big sports match or whether it was a soap opera, and people could talk about it the next day at work and school because they'd all have seen the same program. And of course, now that's not true. And loads of people never watch TV. They watch Netflix instead, or they see videos on YouTube. And the only programs now that can get millions of people in a country watching are live sport.
Simon, I mean, the irony in all of this, I guess, is that the players, as you point out recently in the Financial Times, the players remain resolutely working class.
Yeah, because the way to become really good at a sport is to spend your whole childhood playing it. And who are the kids who do that? It's the working class kids, because the middle class kids, they go on holidays, they have violin lessons, they have lots of other distractions. It's the working class kids often living in big apartment blocks. They go outside because their apartment's small. On the street outside, lots of other working class boys from the neighborhood are there to play the sport. And so they spend really half their childhoods playing it. I mean, that's how Lionel Messi becomes a good footballer. And so it's inevitable that Messi would be a steelworker's son, you know, from a very working class, poor Argentine background. A surgeon's son would not grow up like that.
It's possible to muck this up, isn't it? It's possible to take sport too far out on the limb people start to drift away. People start to go back to lower grade suburban competition.
I don't think so, because I've been hearing people complain about money coming into sport for 25 years now. I've often heard people say, you know, you're going to lose your loyal working class base and the middle class fans are going to be flighty and they're not going to come back. And it hasn't been true, because live sport is a fantastic thing. It's something to talk about. If it's comfortable and safe and you can get something decent to eat and you can use the toilets, then lots and lots of people want to do that. And, you know, you could say that, you know, at Arsenal, the ticket prices of £64 a game provoke protests. And yes, that's a lot of money. But, you know, to do that once a week or once a fortnight, and then have something to talk about and think about for the rest of that fortnight and read about your club on the internet and discuss it with your friends. In a way, I mean, it's a lot cheaper than going out to dinner a few times or then going on holiday. So if you compare it to other pursuits that, you know, people with jobs, with salaries can do, it's far from being the most expensive. I mean, I agree, I would like ticket prices to be lower. Mm. But if you think of the amount of time that people can spend just thinking about their club and reading about it online, then, you know, the going to the game does become an affordable part of that obsession.
And, of course, there's a consolation for Australian sporting supporters, £64 for your basic Arsenal ticket. Think of that. £1,000 a year for a seated membership. Maybe we're doing okay. Thanks to you, Simon. Simon Cooper, he's a Financial Times magazine columnist, co-author of Soconomics.